And I think what's important, I think the all of you will focus, no doubt, in your reports on this, on the numbers. But I would invite you to also understand that there was an unprecedented set of comments in the EPA announcement today. And it's unprecedented because what EPA has done is it has essentially said, we are very interested in maintaining this industry, and we need information from the industry as to policies and programs in addition to the RFS that would allow this industry to be more sustainable and more profitable. So it's inviting, as part of the comment period on the numbers, also the industry to weigh in on what policies do we need to change, what policies do we need to adopt, what policies do we need to consider to make sure that this industry continues to be viable. At USDA, what we're going to focus on are those aspects of this industry that we can control. We established under our REAP program an opportunity for folks to gain financial assistance to build a larger distribution system within the United States so that higher blends of ethanol and biofuels can be accessed. The reality is we've got 8 to 9 million flexible fuel vehicles in this country, but hardly any of them can access higher blends because there just simply aren't the gas stations that sell it. And oftentimes, even if there are, some of the owners of those flexible fuel vehicles may not know or appreciate that they can use a higher blend. So we are going to continue to remind people of the fact that we have this program. We have a business and industry program that provides loan guarantees. And so I think our challenge is to work with the industry, and particularly the large-scale operators in this industry, the Cargills and the ADMs and others, to suggest to them that they need to work to create a distribution system, that they can't rely on the petroleum industry or the convenience store or petroleum marketers to do this. They've got to figure out a way to work around the oil industry because it's pretty clear the oil industry is not supportive of this industry. And they've done everything they can in the courts, in regulation, and in the legislation to try to impede the success of this industry. So we're going to be very focused on this distribution challenge, and we're going to encourage the private sector to weigh in, to work with us, because we are very interested in making sure we continue to get the benefits from this industry. The lower cost to consumers, the choice that consumers have, the jobs that are connected to it, and, of course, the more stable and secure incomes for producers. That's why we are investing in biorefineries. That's why we're continuing to work and excited about the drop in aviation fuel opportunities that we're engaged in 4 projects with the Navy and the Department of Energy. It's why we have regional hubs taking a look at feedstocks and the supply chain for those new feedstocks. They get the Farm to Fly initiative with the commercial aviation industry. And we're, of course, providing assistance under BCAP and some of the other farm bill programs to try to get this industry to a good place.
Michelle Rook, WNAX in Yankton, South Dakota. Can you explain how the EPA decision, how EPA can actually set the volumetric requirements for the ethanol mandate lower than what is required by law?
I will try to do that. I'm not the EPA administrator, and I have a hard enough time operating my own department without operating hers, but I will try. The law does provide for the ability to waive the statutorily designed volume requirements. So EPA is using their waiver authority to reduce the numbers. They would say the reason they are reducing the numbers is that we are at a point where the amount of fuel being consumed in this country is roughly 130 billion gallons. Because there's so little distribution of higher blends of ethanol, most places are only selling E10, so basically 10% of the fuel supply is ethanol. It's 10% of 130 billion gallons is 13 billion gallons. So that's why distribution becomes so important. If you had higher percentages of ethanol available and people were using more E85 or E15 or E30, then we wouldn't have this issue. But because the oil industry's done a pretty good job of making it hard to get those distribution systems in place, we're kind of stuck. The other thing is when those numbers were set, those volume numbers were set, you'll notice that they were increasing every year. They were based on the assumption that Americans would consume each and every year more and more gas as a general proposition. Well, with fuel-efficient vehicles and with unemployment rate over 7%, less gas is being consumed than was anticipated. In fact, we actually have reduced the amount of gas that we are using in this country because we now have cars that get, 30, 40 miles per gallon. So the assumption upon which the RFS was based turns out not to be correct, that we were going to continue to see increases. We've actually seen a decrease. So when you combine the decrease with the lack of availability of E85 and E15, you basically bump up against the math of it. That's why it's important, and that's why the EPA went the extra mile of saying, hey, we've got to figure out how to get more higher blends in the marketplace. Give us your ideas. Tell us what we need to do. Tell us what policies might work, because we are absolutely facing a resistance by the oil industry to make that happen. You go to an oil company and they'll say, well, we don't own the gas stations anymore. We can't tell those gas station folks. But they'll whisper to the gas station, well, you don't want to put those pumping systems in because there's a liability there. And then you got some of the car companies going, oh, my gosh, it's going to hurt your engine and you're going to have a warranty issue. So there's been a whispering campaign. If you've seen the ad, I don't know if it's up in your neck of the woods, but of the mechanic who's under the car who says, if you use ethanol, you're going to be coming in and I'll be fixing your car. Don't use a higher blend. I mean, there's literally TV ads to that effect. So it's a concerted effort. So the key here, I think, is for us to figure out strategies to go around the oil industry. And it may require some of the bigger outfits like a Cargill or an ADM getting in the business of selling gas or figuring out how to partner with convenience store operators to encourage higher blends. That's the best I can do.
Mr. Secretary, Ken Rubin, the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You said we jump on the numbers on the renewable fuel standard, and one of them kind of jumps out, and you actually were there when and signed an agreement for USDA assistance with DuPont to be able to bring a system on, a company, a plant online. And they themselves next year could produce 20 million gallons. And there's only 18 million gallons of cellulose ethanol to 30 million in this entire piece. And we have another plant there that could do the same. Do you think that number is realistic that they're putting forward on cellulosic ethanol for next year?
Ken, I don't know that plant that DuPont's working on is at a stage where they're going to be producing at maximum production. In fact, I talked to folks from DuPont yesterday who said that they're one crop. They need another crop before they get to a point. So they need the 14 crop before they get to full production. So that gets us into 15. And that gets me back to the point I tried to make, which is we're very concerned about 15. We should be. And we're encouraging the industry to come to us and say, okay, we don't like what you're doing here, but you've asked for comments about how we can grow this industry. Well, here are several policies that you should consider. Distribution is one of them. And the industry, I think, has to accelerate the development of these advanced and cellulosic fuels. We should have been further along than we are on this. I think everybody acknowledges that. It's been kind of slow. So hopefully this is a wake-up call. And I think, frankly, you also have to recognize the political reality surrounding the RFS. The petroleum industry has gone after this RFS in a big way. They want to get rid of it. They want to get rid of it. They don't want to amend it. They don't want to change it. They want to get rid of it. All right? So they've gone to Congress, and they have some people in Congress, a lot more than they had a year ago, a lot more than they had 2 years ago, a lot more than they had 4 years ago, who are thinking maybe this is the time to get rid of it. So we've got to maintain that RFS, and we have to mute and mitigate the pushback by the petroleum industry, and we've got to accelerate this advanced biofuel production, and we've got to figure out how to get this distribution wider than just the state of Iowa and Wisconsin and Minnesota. All three states have done a great job. Terrific. But you know what? It's got to be in the other 47 states in the same way it is in Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, some of those other Midwestern states. That's my point. That's what I can control. I don't know what the science and the math is behind all those numbers, but I do know is this. What I can control is this distribution issue. To the extent I have programs in place, if the Farm Bill gets passed, I want to help. And we need to know what kind of help we can provide.